Pickaxe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Triforce Podcast. Today, I'm here. Hi, I'm Lewis.
Hi.
Sip
Hi, Lewis.
Nice to meet you. God, it's, who are you? Some new, fresh kid on the block?
Yeah, wow.
Nice.
I'm ready to go.
Wow. Do you have long hair, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good. You can join the gang then. That was the one.
I've got enough hair for all three of us.
The one thing that we check on before we
the long hair
gang. P-Flex had an attempted wig this morning.
What? Yeah.
Just before we started, there was a little tickle on his head. He thought, his hair's grown back. But no,
it was a spider. A spider. You know what? I dreamt last night that I had hair. It's a dream I have quite often, obviously. I dreamt that I had really long, luscious hair.
Right.
And when I woke up, you know when they say that people who've had a limb amputated have a ghost limb?
Yeah.
I could feel the weight of the hair, but I was just really tired. It wasn't hair there.
And you ran your fingers through your ghost hair.
I literally went to touch my hair and I was like, oh yeah, I'm a bald fucker.
But it was just 10 spiders.
If they could just knit me a little web of hair, that might be interesting.
Yeah, that might be that, like a kind of strings, one of those strings, just handkerchiefs. Yeah.
You should get one of those hair nets, you know, like the ones that people wear when they're preparing food and stuff.
I always find it funny to see a bald person wearing a hair net.
Yeah, you should put one of those on.
Because it's obviously like a corporate requirement, right? In like some of these.
Like you must wear a hair net. It doesn't say if you have hair. It's just like, no, you got to wear one. It's like, I'm bald. I'm sorry. It's like if you set a rule at a corporate level and there's no leeway, you know, it's got to be written very precisely to say, if you have hair, you must wear a hairnet. But I mean, you know, geez, I would refuse to wear a hairnet if I was bald. Those things look ridiculous.
I read an article this week about going back to work and how corporations have an ideal working environment set up for their staff at their offices, right? And so as a result, it was kind of like, I've sort of been led to believe over the whole coronavirus thing that actually it started off like I thought people would go crazy when they're home all the time. But actually, I think it's generally helped. A lot of people have had a better time at home. I'm sure some haven't, like working perched on the end of their bed or on an uncomfortable desk or having to share a room with their partner. And it's like whoever gets to the kitchen table first gets it kind of thing.
Right.
That sort of thing. But I think I read this whole corporate thing about how they were keen to put their staff back in a controlled environment. I was like, oh my God, it sounds like, you know, some evil plan to, you know, enslave people again. I read in a way that was all, I don't know, it was spun with positivity and corporate bullshit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think honestly what it boils down to is a lot of middle management is just terrible. Like they can't justify what they're doing. They can't manage people properly. And the only time they feel like they're managing people properly is when they're just like micromanaging them, when they're sitting like right next to them or whatever. Like when I was working, it was the same thing. Like it was always like, can I work from home, please? I hate going to the office. I was always asking to work from home or looking for some excuse to work from home. And there's always so much pushback on it. Like they just would never let you do it because it was like impossible for them to like measure your productivity because like they wanted to make sure that you were doing stupid stuff like not taking any longer than 1 hour exactly for your lunch and stuff like that. You know what I mean? That's the measure.
Yeah.
I am 100% sure we talked about this.
Yeah, like, yeah. I rant about it all the time.
But I think it
drives me nuts though. The mentality is so bad. Like it's
middle managers, dude. They have to justify their job and their job is to sit at their desk, bash into some calendar when everything's meant to be done, have some piece of software that's for project management. And mainly they're just making sure, like you said, everyone comes back out from their lunch break on time and no one's smoking in the office. That's their job.
I feel like when I had any job, though, I was constantly able to get my job done in a very short amount of time. And then I just dossed off for the rest of the day.
You know,
watched TV online and pissed around and idled and just generally chatted to other people. Just didn't do anything. I feel like if I was at home, I'd probably be the same amount of productive, you know, maybe, you know, I'd get the same amount of work that I knew I was happy doing and could do. And then the rest of the time I'd doss off. I don't think it's that different. Like actually working at home, I think the vast majority of companies and things are still going just fine in the lockdown.
I think any office-based jobs, for sure. Cause they're all using computers anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are some companies that don't.
I
mean, things like manufacturing and stuff like that.
If you're new, then obviously you don't know what you're doing, and you maybe, or if you're in a job where it's like, well, what am I doing today? Yeah. But if anyone who's got a fairly set sort of guideline of what they're doing, they've done it for years, they know what they need to do.
But I don't know if that's most jobs. I think that's the problem is we're looking at it from a sort of office-y perspective, but that's not most jobs. Most jobs are service industry jobs, manufacturing jobs, picking things up jobs, carrying to other places jobs, you know, that's it. And I think a lot of those are the ones that have been affected rather than, if you work with a computer and most of your transactions with customers are done online, you know, you basically...
Well, they're the sort of ones
documents.
I'm talking about, really. Yeah, exactly. They're the ones where I'm just surprised that the corporates are so like, let's get everyone back in so we can put them back under the leash
and
use the cattle prod to poke them every hour.
It makes sense for them to want to go back to exactly how things were before, though, because a lot of things depended on exactly how things were before, right? Like there's so much that goes into it. Like people, a lot of companies need people to be out of their houses. I'm sure we talked about this as well, but
they need
people driving so they buy gas. They need people out so they buy lunch. They need people bored at lunchtime so they go shopping. Like there's so many businesses that depend on that dead time in the day for so many people.
We don't give a shit about the high streets, so why should we, you know, I mean, I don't think we can structure society like that where we say, well, what about the sandwich shops? Like I don't know what to do about it. If things change, what
it's
are we meant
difficult.
To do? Yeah. Online shopping has devastated the high street. I don't know if you've been to a high street recently. It's fucking dead.
Yeah.
Like it's
dead. Well, that's been a long time.
So many big brands gone.
Yeah.
So what are we meant to do? Roll back and say, no, you can't buy things online? Of course not. So it's the same thing. If people now work from home, those industries are going to go under. It sucks.
It's the cycle, though. This has been happening since the dawn of time. That, you know, even back in old Egyptian times, people were like, well, I'm sick of figs now, and all the fig farmers go out.
And
so it's all about the juicy peach.
The difference
now,
with this, though, is that the change is being forced by like an external thing, right? Like a virus that nobody has any control over. Of course, change is inevitable, but the only change we tend to see is change that's brought on by people who are going to definitely capitalize on that change, right? Like there's a push for change when there's a ton of money to be made, but this kind of change is not wanted because things were fine the way they were and people were heading in a certain direction. And then this thing comes out of left field, affects everybody and sort of threatens a new normal or whatever. Yeah. And everybody's like, nah, fuck that. Like, that's not the new normal. Like, we're going back to the normal so that we can then dictate the new normal and make a lot of money off it. Right. Like nobody's ready to spin this and make money. Well, like some people are obviously, but you know what I mean? Like in a general sense.
There's a couple of stores that did very well out of the pandemic. Though.
Sure,
The supermarkets and sort of hardware stores did well and sort of some of these places. Strange necessarily. But anyway, I sort of thinking about jobs and stuff because I watched Sips fly over Ottawa on Microsoft Flight Sim on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And give us a tour of his hometown.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it was so just, I was just enthralled by your like guided tour of, I'd sit on a bus where you just drove around and told me shit about.
It's the AI generated stuff. So none of it looks like
right?
There's no
it's funny when someone tours their hometown, it's the kind of tour you get that's more personalized than here is the school, here is the library. This building is famous because in 1512, you know, it's not like that.
No, yeah.
It's like, that's where I worked. and that's my friend's house. And it feels, I think, when you look at a town...
It's constantly triggering memories, yeah. though, right? Everything you see.
This parking lot is the place where I first did a French kiss for the first time in my life.
right, it's interesting.
Man, I was going for it. Holy crap, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was ready to try it out anyway.
My first French kiss. I can
French
remember
Canadian
that.
Kiss.
I can remember
surely,
it very yeah. well. Yeah, French Canadian kiss.
Yeah, you got to fill your mouth with Pepsi first and then.
I was going to say garlic, but sure.
Yeah, garlic works too.
Oh, no. So it was super nice to see you like be like, oh, that's where you bought bubble gum and that's where I used to work and that's where I used to work.
Yeah.
And like just go. Basically, there's just one fucking big street. That you were like a 6-lane motorway, I uh-huh. guess, or freeway, whatever you'd call it.
It's very North American, yeah.
There's like a mall on one side and some shit on the other. Then a bit further down, it's like a big suburb on one side and a mall on the other. And then a bit further down, there's yeah. like a big suburb and another big mall. And it's like, it's just kind of, it was very American, linear. Just, I don't know, it was cute.
Yeah.
It's nice to see.
I mean, it's a newer neighborhood. It was built in the 80s. So, like, you know, it's very sort of like, organized and like laid out perfectly so that, you know, when you're commuting home on that 6-lane motorway, there's plenty of places to stop off and buy groceries and fill up your car and stuff like, so it's all shit like that. Like the sort of like modern suburban and urban planning sort of stuff, you know, like you don't get that so much in Europe because a lot of the roads are really old, right? So like the way that cities are designed, town centers and stuff are designed are really different.
You'd think it was designed by a genius, but there's so much fucking spaghetti junctions.
Oh,
everywhere.
I know, it's crazy.
I can't believe it.
But it's,
I was like, there's one fucking road here.
There's so much beauty in the chaos, though. Like, I don't know. It's just like it's just nicer, isn't it? Like I in North America, the way things are planned out, you got like you were saying, you've got this big like 6-8-lane road, and then on the side all you see forever are these like lagoon outdoor parking lots and these like outdoor strip malls, you know, like
yeah.
they'll be like the token KFC or something, or like a Subway building like in the middle of the parking lot somehow. Just
but also the schools
building.
Had parking lots of the stat size as well, which surprised me.
Yeah,
so I was like well, I'm not used to schools here having gigantic, you know,
no.
shopping center style parking lots in front of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, over here parking is like, you know, it's so few and far between. It's impossible to get a decent spot, you know, like you have to park like at, you know, a multi-story parking garage or something. It's very rare that you'll have really convenient access to like a building, especially like in like a city center, right? It's like, it's really built up. High streets are usually pedestrianized and everything. But like, especially out in the suburbs, man, the parking is insane. Like there's just like a little store that could fit like 5 people will have hundreds of parking spaces like allocated to it. It's insane.
Is that because of the resistance for the cold weather when it blows in the winter?
I guess so. Yeah, probably.
Because everyone has to drive
but
to get
just
everything.
All the cities in North America are really built up around cars, you know, like there's definitely... You know, even over here, like Jersey's not really a good example because it's such a small place. But like most roads, you can sort of walk along. You know, but like you get to America and Canada, and like you know highways and stuff. No, nobody's walking along a highway. Like you can't really.
Walking in America is very difficult in much of it.
Yeah,
it's just not possible. The towns aren't built the same way they are over here for sure because they didn't. A lot of them didn't grow organically. It's just like estate after estate after estate that were all built because you could buy the land cheaply. They whacked down 100 identical houses that all still have huge backyards.
Yeah.
And then they connected those vaguely with lightly paved roads. But I mean, I went to LA, Inland Empire, for anyone that knows it, and there's just fucking nowhere to walk. Like we tried to walk from the hotel.
Well, no, I remember.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like we would go and get coffee or something and they would be like, I'd be like, oh, can't we walk? And they're like, no.
It's just like, bizarre. What? It's so strange to me. It's alien. Yeah.
It's like across the road, but that road is just completely inaccessible to pedestrians. Like,
yeah.
it'd be impossible to cross. There's no lights or anything because people, you know, it's meant for like, you know, through traffic or whatever. And there's no way you're walking underneath a highway because it's scary and gross.
and there's no there's no pavements, like, anywhere. No. We were walking on a pavement because it was in front of a bank, but when the bank's property ended, the pavement stopped. They were like, it was just for show. And then you're just walking on a verge, and people are, like, staring at you from their cars, like, what's wrong with those people? It's like, what is happening? Like, walking is one of the most fundamental human things, walking about. We couldn't do it. It took us forever to get from one place to another. And the hotel was like, you should really take the shuttle bus. Like, what the fuck? We don't need to be shuttled. It was with these two Russian lads, and we wanted to walk to the target. It took us like 45 minutes. It wasn't far, just because we had to navigate this assault course of impossibility. It was bizarre. We walked through this huge car park for this building. It was like a bank or something. And the car park was like the size of multiple football pitches. And then right in the middle, there's this bank building. And we're just walking through here. Like, can we walk here? Is this allowed? But there was no indication you couldn't, because it hadn't occurred to them that anyone would ever try.
It's very weird.
Hey, I'm not walking here.
Have you guys heard, to change the subject, have you guys heard of Bazooka Joe gum? Sips probably has.
Yeah, of course I have, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Did you ever send off? So Bazooka Joe gum was a famously awful chewing gum that you bought, and it was like a block of pink.
Yeah, there was always really hard.
It was so hard. Like stale.
It would shatter your teeth. Like it was always
unbelievable.
Stale. It was never like fresh.
Never.
You know, you get like that really fresh, nice, fluffy, rubbery bubble gum.
Right.
Bazooka Joe is not that.
It's the opposite of that. But it came wrapped in two pieces of like greaseproof paper.
Yeah, it was like greasy sort of paper, wasn't it? It's like waxy,
right?
Kind of waxy paper.
Yeah, like waxy. So it had a comic wrapped around it, and then it had the outer wrapping around that, I think. And you sort of open the gum, and then there was the gum inside a comic starring Bazooka Joe and his gang.
Yeah.
And every comic said that you could send away for something. So for instance, on the Wikipedia page, it's got number 204, free telescope. I don't know why they call it free telescope, because it's not. Get a close-up view of distant planes, buildings, etc. with this powerful telescope. Opens to 7 inches.
Planes. I thought it was going to say planets, but no, planes.
No, planes. It's not like
it's not good. It's
not a space telescope.
So you have to send 200 comics or 40 cents and 5 comics to Bazooka Box 9200, St. Paul's, Minnesota.
Wow.
I just think it's incredible to me that people must have sent away for these things. If ever got any of the Bazooka Joe prizes, let us know. Let us know
there
what
must
they were
be
like.
Some, that sounds like a Netflix special right there, P-Flex.
It does.
On this topic, my son is a avid reader of the Beano, okay? And they were doing a competition where you could win a Lionel Messi goal and like a ball and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he filled out the form.
A goal.
And
I love how your,
it's like
your
a
football
just like,
knowledge.
Yeah, it's like a no, it's like a little goal. Like,
so
it's like
yeah,
a
there's quarter flag
goal.
or of the pitch. They could want to win a pitch with a bit of the grass from a Messi.
Listen,
I don't know.
The fucking prize was a small plastic goal with a ball with a string attached to the goal. Okay.
Okay.
So it wouldn't go anywhere.
Really
it's like
shit.
Really. It was just like really small kids' toy thing. So he filled out the form and sent it in. And then a couple of weeks later, this thing just turns up in the mail with like a certificate saying, congratulations, you won the competition.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was
Is
really
he
good.
A member of the Dennis the Menace fan club?
I don't think he's a member of the... Oh, yeah. You know what? I think he is a member of the... I don't know
a
if
fellow,
it's called the Dennis
member.
The Menace fan club now. I think they might have changed the name.
I think I'm a member
it,
too.
I had the Nasher badge, which was a cardboard badge with a furry Nasher sort of ring around his face. I had the, what else? You get a wallet that says you're an official member of the Dennis the Menace fan club.
You get a certificate normally.
That stuff is still going. He's got one of those. He got a certificate. He got a wallet. He got.
I was very pleased with myself when that
happened. Yeah, he loves it. We got him like, last Christmas, we got him like this, like, you know, 80th anniversary edition of the very first Beano comic. Like they reprinted some of them and stuff. And we put it in his stocking for Christmas.
Oh my God, I could see that not being incredibly politically correct nowadays. But maybe it's okay.
Dennis the Menace versus Darky, the new guy in the neighborhood.
It's fine.
Oh no!
Fine. Yeah. It was fine.
I mean, that's what comics were like back then. All black people had like their face was like completely black with the big lips and all the googly eyes, everything. That's what, if you look at comics from like even the 60s and previous, it was unbelievable. Yeah. In the 70s, there were a lot of comics where I think there was a big splurge on comics that were like, you know, so and so goes to tame the wilds of Africa and stuff like that. Just deeply, deeply wrong. And kids grew up reading those. I guess that explains a lot about people's attitudes, I think. That generation of people.
I remember about the Beano. I remember getting the Beano when I was young. I can't have been like more than like your son's age, Sips, but I didn't understand the jokes. Right. And I don't know whether it's because I was just too young to understand them or whether I was just stupid and still am, or whether the jokes were maybe bad.
There weren't enough, I remember, like, there weren't enough fucking your mother jokes in there for my liking.
I remember, like, I've told this before, but I remember I would read the Beano and every time I would get to the punchline, I would just not understand that it was the end of the thing and turn over expecting the story to continue.
Yeah.
And there wasn't any more story. So it felt like all I was doing was reading a load of stories that abruptly ended.
Yeah. A sense of how life is, really. Perhaps that's the job of the Beano. Quite philosophical. You think there's going to be more, but there isn't.
Right.
Honestly, and it fills you with a sense of disappointment. I think it's because they have to pump out so many comics per week. Like, it must be really hard to pull that thing together. You know, like, I bet you... Like, they have to print on a certain day, and before that, everybody's just losing their mind. Like, the Gary do the comic? Oh, God! Like, they just, like, have to pull it all together. They can't do it, so there's, like, they probably just end up submitting a bunch of unfinished comics. Like, yeah, we got, like, 80% through this one. We had a great idea for the ending, but, we don't have time.
I don't reckon it's that at all. I reckon that they're the same sort of people that I talked about earlier in the podcast who have done their job for so long that they know exactly how long it'll take them to do their thing in time, and they always do it in time, and maybe they've got a spare one in case of emergency, and that one will go in. So it's probably quite a chill process, I imagine.
They'll have writers who just storyboard it, and then they just give it to the artists, and the artists are just plugging away all day writing, and then it goes to the inking guy and everything, and like it's all written ahead of time, because it's not like it needs to be topical. Like, Dennis the Menace it's not like Private Eye or something. Which amazes me when that comes out. You think, wow, there's so much in Private Eye.
There's so much.
It's crazy.
And it's very current, right? It's like they've got, I think they have a lot of people
oh, God,
writing.
Contributing.
Yeah, contributing.
And I think they can adjust the size of it based on how much they've got as well. You know, if they've got more or less, they can, you know.
I don't know. It always seems to be pretty much the same. The adverts in the back of Private Eye. Have you ever read the adverts in the back of Private Eye?
No, I haven't.
Very strange. The adverts were always...
I went through like a phase with Private Eye where I read it a lot for like a couple of months.
Simon used to get it delivered, so I read it every now and then when it was on his desk.
I do. Yeah. I do. There's sections that I read every week. Like, I always read all the, you know, there's all the funny stuff. And then if there's an article about something that grabs me, like sometimes it'll be... They do some actually very important... sort of investigative journalism, really, in Private Eye.
In the same way that you see, like, Jon Stewart or John Oliver nowadays, I guess, like, used to, you know, Stephen Colbert, are obviously a comedy show, but in a way, they are at the forefront of raising awareness about issues which are clearly important.
Yeah, but in an entertaining way. I think that's the thing. I know that Jon Stewart had a big problem where... I think it might have been Tucker fucking Carlson, or it might have been
Tucker fucking Carlson.
Bill O'Reilly. I can't remember who the fuck talked to him. It was someone, and they said, "You don't understand." Oh, I think it was Tucker Carlson actually, because that little prick. Where they talked to him about how he didn't understand that he had this responsibility, and they're like, "You had so and so on your show, and you didn't even grill him and all this." And he's like, "Guys, we're a comedy show. Like, first and foremost, that's what we do." And his point was that the show that leads into them is about like animated penguins. That was whatever the show was on Comedy Central before the Jon Stewart show. And he's like, "If you're looking at us and saying you're not upstanding journalists, it's like we're not journalists. Like, we're just saying, look at this shit. Isn't it funny? How fucked up is this?" And making stupid jokes about it. I think it's interesting that journalists were looking, well, I call him journalist Tucker Carlson, was looking at him and saying like, "Oh, you're letting the side down," as if he's comparing actual news programs that are deeply serious with fucking Jon Stewart, who's a stand-up comic, and it was all played for laughs. Like, it wasn't often that you had an episode that was deeply serious. And if you look at John Oliver, it's the same.
No,
but
he's a bit
more serious, I think.
Wasn't he sort of almost suggesting that Jon Stewart was trivializing the news by making fun of it, you know, and stuff like this?
I don't think it was that. I think he literally was making out that he had a responsibility in all this, and he let it down. He's like, because I think he interviewed Obama, and I think Tucker Carlson was unhappy that he didn't grill him about something. And Jon Stewart was like, well, look, it was someone he interviewed. And he was like, look, guys, we're a comedy show. Like, if it's not funny, if we in the middle of a comedy show have a deeply serious 10-minute discussion with someone, that's not the point. People don't tune in for that. Like, I used to love The Daily Show. It was really fucking funny.
Yeah, it went on for years, too. Holy
crap. It did, yeah.
You have serious moments.
It's
and,
so bad
you know,
now.
But that's in the same way that, no, it's, I'm afraid it's not what it used to
it's
be.
It's so
sure.
bad
but,
now.
But John Oliver's taken over with Last Week Tonight. It's really good, yeah.
Coming back to magazines, I used to have a subscription to The New Yorker magazine, which I really enjoyed. I don't know if you guys have ever read that before.
Very fancy.
Oh, well,
isn't it quite stiff and sort of boomery and boring?
Parts of it. Some of it is, yeah. But sometimes they had, like, I remember this one edition that came out, and it was like all short stories, and holy shit, it was fucking awesome. Like, I never appreciated short stories until I read every short story in there, and then I was just like obsessed with short stories for a while. Like, I just would seek out all these short stories.
Right.
I don't know what it was about them. Maybe it was just like...
I love short stories.
I felt
stories.
Like it was just something that you could just, you know, read in you know, a couple of, you know, like an hour
it's
or two.
It's a story, but not. Then, but it's short, yeah.
And it's just, it was just amazing. It was really good. And very occasionally they'd have all these, like, interesting articles. Like, I remember reading this article about these guys who lived in Brooklyn who had, like, a beer company, but they grew, like, all the ingredients on the roof of their building and stuff. And it is all right. Like, it was pretty interesting. I kind of liked it.
It sounds like you're basically just browsing Reddit.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I don't think
short stories and
yeah. This is a while
shit
back.
That pops up, I mean, on r/videos.
I think this
yeah.
was like before Reddit. Like, but yeah, it was very much, you know, it just like every once in a while there was like some interesting articles or whatever.
Do you know what? Fuck Reddit, man. Can we just say that? Can we just say fuck Reddit? It's so bad, dude. I mean, honestly, there are so many shitty communities on there. There's so much karma whoring and shit. People yeah. reposting stuff as their own when it's not.
Oh,
people
my
just
God.
Posting a picture of a fucking cat.
You're right.
So many bad videos. There are some really good subreddits, and there are some fucking lousy ones. And just
yeah.
The worst thing for me is you look at a post on Reddit, and someone will make some stupid, awful joke, and there'll be like 100 replies to it, and people riffing off this same joke, and they're all like anti-funny. It's like a black hole of humor, Reddit. It just sucks anything funny into it and destroys it. It's such an awful thing. And then you look at the power that Reddit has. It's unbelievable because so many filmmakers, TV series makers, game makers, all of them are obsessed with the opinion of Reddit. And I was watching, there's a woman called Lindsay Ellis who does reviews and sort of look backs at TV series and movies and why they're good or bad in her opinion. And she did, like, you know, a big thing about The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and a big thing about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we watched all of her stuff. Yeah,
right, she's great. She did one about Game of Thrones, and I can't remember. There was another series that she did where the show developers were like pissed off that Reddit had guessed how the show ends,
right,
and changed the ending of the show because of that. Now, I know I have personal experience of companies paying too much attention to Reddit. It does not fucking matter if some twat on Reddit has guessed the ending of the show. This is not your audience.
Reddit is the ultimate sort of like platform for thinking things are a much bigger deal than they are, and thinking that the audience who cares about those things is much bigger than it is. When really it's not at all.
It's not.
It's,
I mean,
such
it's
a
not
small,
like a,
small, small, small.
It's tiny.
Really insignificant portion of the general population.
It really
but
is.
It's so easy to fall into the trap of thinking that it's the.
It's like
everything.
it's like Twitter as well. People will see an opinion on Twitter and it's got like 100,000 likes or whatever, And people are losing their shit saying, oh my God, this is, you know, this is unbelievable. Everyone's, this opinion is obviously what everyone is thinking, but it's not.
No.
It's a subset of people. And that's the thing with Reddit. It's the same thing that, I mean, you see people who call themselves, I'm a Redditor. Like that's what they do. Like it's a fucking profession. No, it's not. I go on Reddit sometimes. I like TikTok cringe. I quite like that. Live stream fails. I just look for funny videos and shit. Or look some links to interesting articles. But it's very, very rare that you find a decent subreddit. Most of them are filled with awful
I've cleaned
people.
Up my front page over the years to get rid of all of this shit. Because just reading the top or popular is just wank.
Awful.
It's either reposted guff that was lies in the first place, right? Which you then tell someone as a fact. You're like, oh, did you know this? That you read as a fucking Today I Learned or whatever. And you look at it and it's like, oh, it's like reposted 16 times from like over the course of 10 years. And it was bullshit in the first place. Like the one I read last week was that a fucking... The old word, the medieval word for bear was lost throughout time. And the word for bear means brown one. And because people were scared to say the word bear like it was Lord Voldemort or something, and they'd summon a bear. And of course, the whole thing's bollocks. But, you know, I sort of regurgitated it as fact to Simon the other day, and he was like, is that true? And I was like, actually, I don't fucking know because I read it on Reddit. And so therefore... It's probably not. Because people are obsessed, though, like you said about Game of Thrones, with being original. And they can't, if they read the ending to their thing on Reddit and they're like, oh, shit, this guy's figured it out. I don't want to seem to be copying him. And also, if it's that obvious, then I'm going to fucking have to change it, aren't I? Make it more unpredictable. And it's like the same thing with games. Like if there's a popular mod for something in the game, you can guarantee that game is not putting that thing into their game anymore. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like the antithesis of what they want to put in their game because someone else has had the original idea and they're terrified of, I don't know, getting copyright struck by a fan or some bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Or being accused of plagiarism off some fan. You know, it's like, oh, well, why would we buy the DLC when we could just use this guy's mod? It's like, oh, I don't know, like you can see the thought process. And I think Reddit is this easy place to get criticism. And people want to hear what people think of their stuff. They like to get their penis stroked by
It's very hard to get feedback. I think this is the essential problem. If you're a TV show maker or a filmmaker or a game maker or any, and you're making any kind of media, how do you get feedback from people? How?
Reddit's a ready source of it.
That's it.
It's all curated.
It's very
uploaded.
Hard to get any other feedback.
You know, what are you going to do? Tweet out and say, what do people think of the new Spider-Man movie? It's like, no one's going to fucking tweet and a coherent response to it. But if you read like a thread in the r/moviecritic sub fucking Reddit, and they're all like, there's a thread called addressing problems with the coherency of the new Spider-Man franchise, you know, and it's full of armchair arseholes.
It works both ways,
you know,
though, right?
They think that some of that stuff is valuable to
some
them.
Some of the negative feedback is not at all useful, but then some of the positive feedback is not at all useful either. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things if you make a TV show and then you asked on Twitter or Reddit or whatever, you know, what's your opinion? Like, just to try to get like a general sense or whatever. It's so off. Like, you can never get anything like good from that, right? Because some people will say they like it, even if they don't like it. You know what I mean? Like, just because whatever, it's you or something. And then sometimes the negative criticism is so weirdly specific and not at all relevant or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know why anybody would bother to.
It's weird
to ask on social media for an opinion on anything. It's crazy.
Right. Who's going to answer? Either people with nothing better to do, who probably, you know, who cares? If there's people trolling Reddit all day looking to respond to something, they're probably obsessed with that thing. If they're obsessed with it, can you really take their opinion? Are they the average viewer? Like I said, any show or product or game that goes out and is selling lots of copies and doing well, that's your feedback.
I don't know.
That's
like
it.
Like, if I'm ever asked for feedback on anything, okay, say somebody asks you for feedback on something, and it's something that you know, like, a bit about, even.
But do you know this person?
Yeah, maybe you do, or maybe you don't. It doesn't really matter. But say you know...
Maybe you have children, maybe you won't.
You know a bit about the subject, enough to have an opinion on it, right? Even if somebody asked me, what do you think of this? If generally I liked it, I would just say, yeah, I like it. Whatever. You know, like I would never go specifically into, you know, points or like if I'm streaming and I'm playing a game And I've played a game for like hundreds of hours, and there's a couple of things about it that I don't agree with or I think are broken or whatever, I'll mention. But that's like a really invested thing, right? I've played this for like 200 hours in front of a bunch of people, and it's like, you say, like, I might say, oh, this is kind of broken, or this doesn't work, or whatever. And then people in the chat are like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really make sense. It's kind of broken, or whatever. And then that's just sort of like your opinion on it.
Oh, my God.
But if somebody's on Twitter, like, what do you think of the new Marvel movie? And I saw it, and after I left the movie, in a general sense, I was satisfied with the movie. I'd just say, yeah, it's pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, I would never go into it. Like, fuck it, who cares? It's just weird. I do
have some respect for people who criticism for a living and can pinpoint obvious things, because I've for example, I was given an early edition of Humankind, and I was told to fill in this whole like survey right about it, and I was like, yeah, sure, and I went through, and as I looked at it, I just was like, I played the game for like 4 or 5 hours, and I was like, I realized that I just couldn't answer these fucking questions coherently. I had a good time, but it was fine, and I didn't know whether I was just happy with it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't have anything to say. I didn't have any criticism. But even then, like, I felt like I wasn't really able to say what things I liked and what things I didn't like and what things I would change. I didn't know how to change them. I was like, I had a good think about it and like what, and I had an enjoyable experience, but I couldn't answer these questions. It was like, you know, because it was like, oh, how did you rate this thing on a scale of 1 to 10? And I was like, wait, and I just spent the whole time like going down the middle, and like, I was like, it's okay. It's like, it's all good. It's good. But is it like, is it a 10 good or is it a 9 good?
What is this relating to, though?
So like, what? Idiotic.
Like, is it like a book, a movie? Sorry, I missed like what?
It was a game. So I played a game.
All right, okay.
Yeah. It's the new Civilization from Endless Legend, people who've joined.
Is it good? It looks good.
Yeah. Well, I can't really talk about but they put out like an hour long demo thing for everyone recently, and they're going to do a few more. So you get to see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm excited, but I just felt like I sometimes really struggle to I don't know if you get this, and maybe it's just me, but sometimes like I watch something and I really enjoy it, and then I read someone's criticism of it, and they're like, oh yeah, it had all these things wrong with it, and I'm like, I agree with all of that. I'm like, yes, I agree that these things were bad, this was bad, and they say, you know, and they end up, and if I'd read that review first, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. But because I didn't read the review, I actually quite enjoyed it while I was there.
Well, yeah, I think
quite a fun.
It's a personal
time.
Thing, isn't it?
I get that with movies a lot.
Yeah,
like if I go in to see a movie blind, I'll come out, and often it's only after I've spoken to other people and they point out things that were bad about it that I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
but it's like it is weird. But that's my point: is that when they ask for feedback, the kind of people that give that feedback extensively are either obsessive or obsessed with their own opinion.
Yeah, there's a big difference, right? Like, if your criticism is like of a technical nature, and what I mean by that is like, you know, maybe like the effects aren't like up to scratch, the acting's not very good, maybe the dialogue's not written very well, maybe there's parts of the story that just aren't written very well, or it doesn't like, you know, fuse together well into like the arc or whatever, then yeah, okay, sure, criticism, like I can agree with that kind of stuff, but it's such a reading a book or going to a movie or something like that, it's not for you to change, right? Like you're either in the mood to see a movie like that, or like there's so many factors to it, right?
Yeah,
you're in a good mood, you're gonna like the movie. You're in the mood to watch a movie on that specific genre or topic because you're into that sort of thing at the time, you're going to like it. You're like, you know what I mean? There's so many things that go into it that you can't.
For me, like, it's all about like holding my attention, right? Like when I watched your flight sim video of you just flying around, I was rapt with attention for the whole thing. Okay?
Right. Like, I mean, it was like a 10-second clip. So
no, but it was like well, you flying done. Through Ottawa for like, it's 10 minutes long.
Oh, right.
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
And the same thing with you did like a full like 10-minute tour of San Francisco where you
just talked about that one.
And you made bullshit up. So they're out. You can watch them on Sips' YouTube channel. But
this is a great plug like, for me. Am I this week's sponsor or something without knowing?
No.
It?
Oh, right. We don't have a sponsor this week.
Right.
Actually, we might have some coming up.
I'll
so
sponsor
stay tuned.
This week. If you guys keep talking about my YouTube videos and stuff.
YouTube.com/Sips. Is that, does that work?
Well, actually, I did sort of state to myself in my mind and nobody else that I had some talking points that I wanted you to cover. It needed to be a certain length, and there was some other technicalities that you missed out on, but I'll
right.
let it slide.
I had to repeat the name of the YouTube channel at the front and back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It has to be further. If it's an hour-long podcast, it has to be between 6 minutes and 54 minutes. Yeah. In. It can't be at the end. Yeah. Anyway, getting distracted. All it matters for me is that it holds my attention. Yeah. Mostly, I think that's something that's good. Like I the ones I don't like I remember watching that Leonardo DiCaprio, what's it called? The Great Gatsby movie, and everyone rates about it. Everyone loved it.
The Island of Dr. Monroe. No.
Some movies, like I just kept getting distracted and couldn't get on with them. Yeah. I don't think I particularly liked.
Well, I'm like that. I'm like that on a plane. I can't watch a movie on a plane. I'm constantly distracted, and I just can't like immerse myself.
But sometimes,
into a
if
movie.
You've got a really good one, it'll pull you in, and that'll distract you for 2 hours.
It doesn't happen on a plane.
What I need,
I want it to desperately because I want the flight to be over at any given time in the flight, but. It just never, I'm always like distracted. Like there's a little bump or something. I'm like, oh fuck, what's that? You know, like I got to stop everything I'm doing and really think about that for 10 minutes. What was that bump?
I think something
what
really good could just suck you in though, right? Like almost like put you on autopilot.
My brain's just not ready to be sucked in by anything like on a plane for some reason.
Do you know what? Do you know what I've been doing this morning and yesterday evening just to change the subject?
Playing golf?
I'm having to go through a list of games. I'm doing something in a week or so, and I had to go through a list of games on Steam that aren't out yet.
Right,
and they're all sort of potential. I guess some of them are doing demos, or you know, they're all sort of indie devs. Basically,
well, they do. So like the Tiny Teams Festival that we did,
right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
Go for it.
99% of these games are so fucking bad. I honestly cannot believe it. I don't know what is happening.
What do you mean? Well, almost all of the games on Tiny Teams were really good.
Right.
I've got a couple of games here that I'm waiting to come out. And what I've noticed, Flax, is that they do this thing. They do like this prologue thing, right? When the game isn't ready. So you can play like Barn Finders, for example, did this recently. I know you didn't like Barn Finders. I didn't really like
that
it.
That was so bad.
It was pretty bad. But so before the game came out, maybe a month before it came out, they did Barn Finders the prologue. And it was like, you could play like 15 minutes of the game. You know, it was like basically some of like the opening cutscenes, the tutorial, and then you had like, you know, 5 minutes to play.
Right.
The rest
I think
of it.
That's a good idea.
It's kind of a good idea, but it's such a, I don't know, it's like, I just want the whole game, you know? Just like,
yeah, no, I understand that. But my point is that there are an awful lot. First of all, there seems to be a huge subset of gamers out there who will buy games that are adventure games where you have to marry an anime character of some kind.
Yeah.
Normally, you're in charge of some kind of school or academy.
Right.
And there are a lot of scantily clad, very young looking.
Luke's getting really excited about that.
Yeah.
Teenage girls. And
oh my God, you're so right. If you look at Steam Spy ever, which I try and do quite regularly because I'm interested in new games, there's always fucking some anime romance, female protagonist, sexual content thing at the top. And honestly, you are right. Like, there's a Twitter that I follow called Steam Trailers in 5 Seconds or whatever. And that's basically post any new game that gets posted on Steam. The trailers get auto shortened and uploaded to this Twitter feed. And me and a bunch of other people follow it. And I'm constantly seeing really shitty games.
Just awful.
Like awful, awful, awful games.
The top of new and trending on Steam for me right now is Kandagawa Jet Girls, which looks like it has...
That's personalized to your taste.
It looks like it has everything that you
described.
That's
based on things that you've previously put out
into. I don't own
a single
anime game, though.
I know you don't. I know.
So I don't know why, like, this stuff... Well, no, new and trending isn't, like, curated for you, though, is it? It's your queue. Like, you browse your queue thing. Which I've had a couple of stinkers come up in my queue on stream before as well. Like this game called Perfect Lover. Because I've got the filter off, so it shows the adult games.
I have the filter on. Anything that has the word anime in the title, any sexual content stuff, gone. I do not want to fucking see it.
But what if it's like a game like I'm not saying like a game by Rockstar, but you know, what if it's like something like Hotline Miami or whatever, like something that's like
that wouldn't be under that filter.
No, but what if it did accidentally come under one of those filters and then you missed it? That's what I'm all right.
Okay. Also, if it was good, people would talk about it. Sure. I'm talking about just the constant recommendations that Steam gives you for shit. Like, you go and look at new games, and I'm just going through them. I'm like, these all look bad. These are bad, bad, bad. So many of them are just like, how many particle effects can we cram on screen? Frenetic 2D action. It's just mindless flashing lights. There's so many. I just can't stand them.
This is why I've been going through all the old AAAs. Like, Death Stranding was amazing. Horizon Zero Dawn, really, really fun. Really enjoyed that.
I haven't played that yet.
I'm going to, but those are AAA titles.
I'm saying indie titles that are not dreck, like absolute dreck. And they're few and far between. And it worries
me. Dreck?
It worries me because you get...
What does dreck mean?
Dreck means fucking awful.
Right.
Where's that? What's that term?
I think he just made it up.
How am I still learning new terms?
Dreck.
Just make it up.
No, I haven't made it up. It's a fucking word. People out there will know, right? There are plenty of people who have heard the word dreck. And they'll know what I mean.
I think there is a little bit of a dearth of a really big indie title that we haven't played yet. Because the reason is because last week everyone was obsessed with Flight Sim. This week everyone's been obsessed with PGA Tour Golf.
Oh, baby.
Oh, man, it is so good.
Me and Sips have been playing that.
Hey, I played against Crendor last night, Flax.
Oh, yeah.
We did a best of three.
Man, my opening game was such a stinker. Fuck. I dunked it in the water.
You got so angry, it actually put me off playing with you.
I find it super frustrating. Like, do you know what it is? Like, speaking of Reddit, I was reading this thread on Reddit yesterday about me getting angry at golf. And somebody in the thread was saying like, oh, you used to be so chill. You never used to get angry or whatever, like, you know, when you did YouTube stuff. And I thought about that. I was like, yeah, it's true. I don't remember ever getting like overly frustrated or angry or whatever. But when I did lots of YouTube stuff, I never really played any competitive games. Most of the games I played were single player, story, like adventure-y kind of games that weren't frustrating, or like management games where you built stuff or whatever. I still play a lot of those games, but I find more so now, especially through streaming, because some of these games are great. Like PGA, like the whole career thing is really fun. And I feel like for streaming, that's something that's like not too bad to watch. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the issue is, I don't think it's just to do with the games that you play. I think it's also, there is a difference between playing a game on your own and playing a game knowing that people are watching.
Yeah, and criticizing you as well.
It's like having people over your shoulder when you're doing something. It adds pressure to it.
The big one with PGA Golf is everybody's constantly... Because there's the difficulty settings for your swinging and stuff like that is separate to the difficulty settings of the course, right? So people see the difficulty setting on the course and they're like, oh, he's fucking playing on easiest, what a fucking idiot. And it's like, no, I'm not. Like the actual swing timing and everything, I'm not playing on easiest. And that's the hard part of the game. The courses vary from like easiest to hard or whatever. But it doesn't matter because, like, as long as you're getting your swings timed properly, you're landing the ball like where it needs to and stuff like that, that it's irrelevant. But like, it's such a big sticking point for Twitch chat, like
so
the difficulty that you're playing at, and how somehow you might land a shot and they just will not accept it. They're like, oh fuck, there's some fucking magic here. Like, this guy sucks at games. Like, there's no way I'm allowing this. I can't accept that this guy could maybe be good at a game. Like, there's no way.
This guy in chat accused me of cheating and said he was going to report me to 2K Games and like stomped off.
Yeah.
And it was because, you know, your chat was like obsessed that my shots were too straight. The up and down was too straight, even though my timing was awful. The up and down on the controller I've got is very limited. It's not like a very wide range of motion, which is actually quite helpful. So I can go back and forward on it quite consistently because I just don't think it has that range of motion that like a proper Xbox or PS controller has.
Yeah.
This was the topic of conversation the entire time I was streaming. What difficulty is he streaming at? What controller has he got? Is he hacking? And it, like, constantly. To the point where it actually, if like, that was what made me angry. The game that didn't make me angry. It was just sometimes like, oh.
I played two games this week that I really sort of wasn't into. One was Elite Dangerous.
Oh, man.
Right?
Such a tedious game.
I found it hard to get into that, too. And the thing is, Okay, I know people listening to this right now are...
Lovely Dangerous. Yeah, absolutely.
Jumping out of their seat, getting ready to scream at us and stuff, okay? I don't hate Elite Dangerous, for the record. Not at all.
I had a nice time, but I had to set myself in this sort of slower mindset where I wasn't going to use my brain, really. I was just going to point in a direction, sort of spin around and zoom somewhere and sort of idle watching starfields go by while I sort of got to a location.
I like all that stuff there. But I find with Elite, you just have to be... You have to be in the mood to really invest in something for the long haul. It's not a game that is enjoyable.
I feel like if I'd smoked a load of weed, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. Yeah. I think.
But don't you just find like when I played it? I don't know. I did play it a few years ago now. It was just everything that you do takes like 5 times longer than I thought it would take. It's not a fast-paced game.
No,
it's a very slow-paced game. Getting in your ship and taking off, docking, all that shit. It was just like in the old Elite, I was blown away by the original Elite when I played it. I used to play it on my Commodore. I loved it. It felt incredible, even though it looked like shit, you know, compared to games now. At the time, it was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
It was a similar pace as well, honestly.
It was great, yeah. And there was a lot of just flying about, looking at the prices of things, making notes and everything. Like, it was fun because it was new and there wasn't anything like it. But when I play games like that now, I do not have the patience to spend doing and learning all these incredibly intricate controls and everything.
Yeah, I think
it just drives me mad.
I liked Freelancer. I thought Freelancer did a good job of not being overly sort of like heavy on the controls and stuff. Like it felt arcadey, but it had, you know, just some nice bits to it, trading, and it's just easier to get around and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
just
that was
like,
quite popular.
I like Freelancer. I could play another Freelancer, but Elite is. I think it's great. I just don't think it's for me. You know what I mean? And some people really struggle with that. Like they just think that you should love their favorite game or whatever. And I appreciate that it's probably great. But I just can't get into it.
I mean, I guess it's the same with me and Dota. You get people saying, I just don't understand how you can play this. And it just looks so dense.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Totally.
It's the same thing.
I don't know. Like sometimes I've played a couple of games in the last couple of years. Obviously, my favorite game of the last couple of years was Return for the Obra Dinn.
Oh, man. What
which is amazing. Really, really, really good actual game. Like something really different, really fun. I want to see more games like that.
See, that's an indie game.
Yeah.
By
that
one
was a
guy,
fantastic
I think.
Indie game. Yeah, Lucas Pope. He made Papers, Please.
Right, and
yeah.
You think, I don't know if there were other people involved, but I remember it took him quite some time to make it, which made me think it probably was just him. That's incredible. I'm not saying every game has to be as good as the Obra Dinn, but at least he had
the other game,
an idea for a game, and it was intriguing, and he carried it through.
It
was very original and everything like that. I think it shows how hard it is to get a really good original idea. But some
really
of these
does.
Games, it's a studio making it. And I just think, what is this? At what point did you look at this and think, this will be fun?
Well, you're right.
And often
they just go with the safe bet of what's been done before. They're like, okay, let's just make Assassin's Creed, but in the future with robots. And, you know, you're basically going to climb up onto a point. And but instead of a tower, it's going to be a giant giraffe robot.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Horizon Zero
Dawn.
Right. It's basically, you know, it's like, it's the same game as they, or third person controller based thing that works. You know, they can't take risks with these big mega budget games that are developed by hundreds and hundreds of people.
But what I'm saying is, I feel like too many of the indie dev games that I've been looking at are either, you think there must be a troll. Like, I think this has to be a joke, right? There's no way someone's made this thinking people will like this. They've come up with one idea. They're like, what if we had like a shooter, but you're a dog and you shoot bones at people? You're like, okay. And then, I mean, I'm not even kidding. That's the kind of shit you have.
Yeah, you're right. It's like they're drawing things out of a hat.
Right,
it's like
literally.
A randomizer.
It's like when South Park, how they said that Family Guy's written, they get some manatees to pick things out of a tank or something. It's like that. They chuck a bunch of things in a hat. Draws. Okay, so cutesy anime girls, and what's this? Battle arena and tile-based combat. Okay, yeah, let's do that. It's like, what is this?
I would play that. I would play that. That's what I want. Do you see what I mean? Like, I almost play every single turn-based game.
Okay, imagine this, though. A turn-based game where you're a guy out in the wilderness, okay, and you can build.
Hang on a second. I think I know where this is going.
And you could go hunting or fishing or whatever.
Oh my god!
It doesn't even have to be turn-based. Actually, let's just throw that one out the window. It's real time.
Oh, I'm not.
It
I'm
looks
out.
Like Red Dead 2, graphics wise, but you can do all this. Like, oh man, I'm at the point now where I think of a game. And that's what I want to play. A bit like Flax when he was on Pitch Please. He woke
up
in the morning and he's like,
"I love how we started just playing games in our mind."
Yeah, that's it. Well, the ones that are coming out just aren't up to
What's
scratch.
Happened?
This is what gets me is these people know how to code. They know how to animate.
This is what I did when I was a kid, right? When I was a kid, I couldn't play games, so I played games with my mind.
Right, but this is the thing, Lewis, is it's frustrating to me because I can see that there must be some technical ability to these people to be able to make this game. It clearly runs, right? It's got animations, it's got everything, but there's no idea. We have two ideas right here. Dudes from Alaska and Untitled Crime Empire game, right?
Yeah.
Because the one that everyone said, oh, Piran, have you seen? So-and-so just came out. It sounds like the game you made.
No.
It's shit.
No, yeah.
It looks like shit.
You get that all the time. It just sounds like, and it's some game that is nothing like what you've described. You get that a lot as well. The latest one that chat tried to get me on is I really enjoyed playing Hitman 2 a lot. And I was like, fuck, I could really go for another game that's like Hitman 2. So then every game that they've ever wanted me to play in the past that I've always like poo-pooed and said, no, I'm not playing it. Now they've started saying, it's just like Hitman. You'll love it. It's like some fucking card game. Like, you fucking play this card game, it's exactly like Hitman. You'll love it. It's like, well, okay.
That's the trick. They found the little trigger.
They found the loophole.
Because you didn't play Hitman for the longest time because you just thought it was bad or something, didn't you? Yeah,
I just thought it was going to be dumb. I just thought, you know what? I even tried it at one point and thought, you know, after people going on and on and on about it, I thought, oh, fuck, you know, it's probably pretty good. This big AAA game or whatever. And I played the free version. I was like, I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand why people love this so much. But then when I really got into it, I was like, fuck, it just clicked. And I was like, oh my God, I can see why people love this.
And that's one of these ones.
It's so good. Jesus.
But it's the things that make Hitman feel good are not necessarily what you think.
Exactly.
Are going to be, you know.
Oh, it's so satisfying.
It's weird the recommendations that I get when I'm streaming. Like, I think most people know that I play Dota. I play CSGO from time to time. We play, what else do we
anime
play?
Anime stuff.
Anime titty-based games, anything
I've seen you
it's always in
a
fucking academy. Why is it always in some kind of school or academy?
Why is it always a match four or like one of those assemble the puzzles with those squares
I
as
just
well?
Don't
There's
understand.
Always like,
why is it always, it must be, I mean, this is, these are games.
Isn't that, by the way, isn't that the worst puzzle of all time? The one with the picture, which broken up into squares and you have to slide squares.
It's just awful.
I
hate
those.
Just awful.
Isn't that the worst puzzle ever?
That's what we had before we had computers. That, I mean, you would always get one of those. It was like fucking Mickey Mouse, and it was a jumble. You had to slide the tiles around. There's one free square, right? And you have to slide.
If anyone
them,
makes that game,
that's
and
it.
It's not for a student programming project. I want to be able to shoot them in the face through the internet. Just there should be a device that's coded up. Steam, just set it up. That will just it'll just delete your game if you upload that.
I wonder how much these games that come out change. Like, okay, look, I'm on Steam right now. Let me go to the front page here.
There's a bunch of those sort of shitty puzzles that we've seen, like the pipes one, joining up pipes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it used to be like a one of these games in Mass Effect or whatever, where you would like have a hacking mini game, you know, or whatever, and it would be some dumb. I'd add some dumb old school shitty 2D. Horrible, your grandma might play it, wanky game,
right.
You know?
Okay, I'm looking at this game right now called Iratus Lord of the Dead, okay?
Oh my God, that's so bad.
I've played it, yeah.
It looks terrible, okay? this is me, okay? I come to Steam, I see a picture of a game where there's some dude with like some fucking tribal markings tattooed to him, and he's got red eyes and long gross hair and a crown, and it's all like dark and dingy looking or whatever. That's an instant turn off for me. I don't also
that's 90% of the games.
I just don't get like but I'm sure it's great. Like, the recent reviews are mostly positive. All the reviews, there's been tons of them, are very positive. There's six people from my friends list that own this game. One person has it wish listed. Like,
yeah, it's okay.
It's terrible.
It's like a bad version of Slay the Spire meets Darkest
Dungeon.
Right,
okay. So yeah, so it's a card.
Here's my problem. The animations are fucking abysmal. The gameplay is incredibly slow. It's taken a brilliant concept, Slay the Spire, and added completely unnecessary complexity to it, like this god-awful crafting system and fucking socketing of stuff. Fuck off. Slay the Spire was good because it was just pure, perfect gameplay.
It was simple.
All these games copying are like, what if it was Slay the Spire, but we fucked it up by throwing seeing what sticks.
This is what I was thinking about before, though. I wonder, like, what the sort of concept of this game was, like, before they added all this stuff. Because I feel like you have the core of a game where it's like, I have an idea for a game. And that idea for a game doesn't include all of the, like, hook stuff, right? The stuff that's going to, you know, shift copies of it, right? So, like in this case, it's probably like, do you think that this game was born of Slay the Spire? Or do you think the concept for this game was something else, but then they were like, Slay the Spire is really big now, so let's make it like Slay the Spire? But it might have just been a completely different game.
A lot of games tried to copy Slay the Spire.
Right.
Which, I mean, this is the other thing, is that when we get one of these games coming along, like Slay the Spire, the reason I've got so many hours in it is because all these other games that try to copy it just try to copy it and stick other shit on. They don't put an interesting twist on it. They just think, how can we add more detail to this and get some of that Slay the Spire money? I assume it must be that cynical, because you cannot make a game this bad with so little love. There's no love in it. There's no purity. All these games like Obra Dinn and Slay the Spire, at heart, they are simple. You can describe them in one sentence without all this extra shit that they chuck on. It drives me up the cocking wall.
Obra Dinn was great.
I think it's tough because when you are envisioning a game, when you finish Slay the Spire and you think, I really enjoyed that, I want to play something similar. And I think that there is an audience for that. And that there's also, in the same way that, you know, you finish Assassin's Creed, you want to play Assassin's Creed 2. You finish, like, Assassin's Creed, you want to play Horizon Series, and it's familiar enough.
I don't want to give them any more praise than I would to someone.
I suppose
making
what you're
a,
saying is that it does stifle creativity.
It does, because it's the same with films. It's like, you know, do you remember when superhero movies were a thing? Everybody started making fucking superhero movies. When zombie movies were a thing, everybody started making zombie movies.
Yeah, that...
But they were all fucking shit. And some of them cost an awful lot of money, and they were fucking awful.
Yeah.
And there were tons of books set about zombies. Everything, zombie, 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 zombie. And half the fucking games on Steam were something to do with zombies. And no one was doing anything original apart from like one or two people. And I just think, you know, if you actually stopped for a second and thought, yes, zombies are popular, but that doesn't mean there isn't room for something else, or we can do something interesting.
I think it's a very scary thing. It's a very, lots of people, first of all, lots of people can't take the risk. And second of all, when they take the risk and make something, once they've created and put all this effort and time and money into making it, they realize it's not fun to play because they never were really able to get their hands on it properly. You know, like sometimes like Hitman, stuff like this, like sounds like it's got enough elements in it that makes it reliably okay. It's going to be okay, you know. Whereas something like, you know, you put out Obra Dinn, it might just be really not fun, you know. But for the only people who could take risks, anyway, this is why with your 1,000 indie games or whatever you have to look at, I think you're going to have to just have a little sort through and see if you can find some good ones, because there will be some absolute gems in there. And that's the thing, out of all of this,
you see some things you think, all right, this is actually quite interesting. And some of them have like a really cool look. I absolutely understand being inspired by, if you want to put it that way, or as another way, copying other games. That is absolutely fine. There are plenty of games that are copies of other games that are good. Slay the Spire didn't invent card-based combat. Absolutely, they did not. But they did it really well. And I worry that a lot of these devs are just churning something out. They've obviously got talent. They can do what they do. I just wish they would wait, get a really good, the idea has to be the core of it.
Yeah.
I'd worry that they jump in and sort of code something and they think, all right, what can I add to this? I would rather they spent fucking 6 months getting the idea perfect.
They need someone who's maybe has crafted an idea over years, who has visited cold reaches in the north of Canada, someone who's considered what it's like deeply. They've thought about living in a cabin.
Oh.
They've played a lot of games. Yes. They need an inspiration. They need a figure.
Right.
A designer, if you will.
But that's why a lot of these people, I think, try to do the designing and the coding, but they are two very, very, very different things. And I think often people who are unbelievably good coders and can obviously do it don't actually know what's fun.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
You need somebody who's enlightened. You need somebody who's young, attractive, and just has a great idea. You know, like Bill Gates with Windows 95. That was a great idea. Okay. So my idea, Dudes in Alaska, is a great idea as well. And I'm young and attractive and enlightened, and I feel like I could design the shit out of this game. All I need is people.
You know Windows 95 back for forward.
Yeah.
You know,
knows it inside out.
Yeah. And all I need is a couple of $1 million and a couple of people who know how to do things like do art.
A couple of $1 million.
Do some programming.
Don't sell it short, dude. This is a $1 billion idea.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's going to generate $1 billion, but it's not going to cost $1 billion to produce.
You're saying the seed capital that you require is but a
Just a couple of $1 million, and then we're on our way. We're gonna make the best fucking video game that you've. See, Lewis is already putting in his bank details to transfer the money over. He's like,
I'm amazed. Yeah, I'm doing it. Right, okay, that's enough. Thank you, everyone, for listening this week.
Yeah.
We'll see you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.